There are fresh developments in the Valerie Plame leak case. This week opened with a Supreme Court decision not to hear appeals from two reporters trying to keep their sources secret from the demands of a federal prosecutor and a grand jury. Now it looks set to close with one of those reporters handing over his notes. Time magazine announced today it will provide Matthew Cooper's notes to the grand jury investigating the leak of CIA officer Valerie Plame's identity. Plame was named in a column by Robert Novak shortly after her husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, wrote an editorial critical of some of the evidence in the Bush administration's case for weapons of mass destruction in the run-up for the war against Iraq. In a statement issued today, Time editor-in-chief Norman Perlstein asserted that the magazine will continue to support the protection of confidential sources, but also that, quote, the same constitution that protects the freedom of the press requires obedience to final decisions of the courts and respect for their rulings and judgments, that Time, Inc., strongly disagrees with the courts, provides no immunity. If you have been following this case, if you have questions about it, give us a call. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email at totn@npr.org. Joining us now in Studio 3A is Matthew Felling, a media director for the Center for Media and Public Affairs. And good to have you back on Talk of the Nation. Fast-moving story here.
Good to see you again. Yeah, this week has been a roller coaster in terms of developments in this story.
As recently as yesterday, Matthew Cooper and Judith Miller of The New York Times were both saying they would rather go to jail than answer questions about their sources. Now, Time magazine itself is also a defendant in this case, is going to turn over notes.
Yeah, Time magazine basically has been the big elephant behind Matthew Cooper this entire time. And he was saying, I'm not going to give away my sources. And you've got Time Warner, this corporate behemoth behind me, and they're going to back me up on this. And apparently yesterday, the judge in the case, it was bizarre. Yesterday, he was supposed to come down a ruling, and yesterday he pretty much said, I'm going to count to 10, 9, 9 and a half, 9 and 3 quarters, and Time blinked. Time magazine just completely blinked, and they said they were going to use this loophole that they were not going to use Matthew Cooper's personal notes on the story, but they were going to use his Matt Cooper at timemagazine.com, his corporate email account, because that is still the intellectual property of Time magazine. And I just think it's extremely ironic given the fact that Time magazine just 3 years ago was worshiping the whistleblowers and making them news people of the year. And the very reason we have whistleblowers is because of this anonymity that we grant them. And now Time magazine is cutting off its nose to spite its face.
Mm-hmm. But does that get Matthew Cooper off the hook?
Well, that's the interesting part of this story. A lot of people have begun to suspect that it's not about Matthew Cooper and it's not about Judith Miller at the New York Times. But the prosecutor in this case isn't looking for them. He's looking for something higher and bigger, somebody inside the White House who might have allegedly perjured him or herself on the record, because in this investigation, everybody in the administration came before the judge and was questioned. So I think the attorney, the prosecutor, is looking to see if he can nail somebody inside the White House. And because the judge and the prosecutor is not aiming at Matthew Cooper, just the fact that they get his information, I think, should be enough at this point.
Well, let me go back there for a minute. You said something very interesting there. This case involved the leak of the name of a CIA agent. Leaking the name of a Central Intelligence Agency operative is illegal by law. Some people have said you can debate how serious an act it is. But anyway, a serious violation of federal law. You're saying now that it isn't the naming of the federal agent the federal prosecutor is now looking into. It's, in effect, the cover-up.
No, it is the person who leaked out of the administration to Matthew Cooper and to Judith Miller, because they're trying to track a pattern of behavior on the part of this person. Because the smoker of the smoking gun in this story is Robert Novak, the guy who actually divulged her information in a column that he wrote 8 days after Joseph Williams' column. And this all goes back to President Bush's State of the Union address with those infamous 16 words about enriched uranium from Niger. So what we're looking at is it's a battle of precedents, which is what the Supreme Court always has to deal with. In 49 states out of 50, we have a shield law within that state, which protects journalists who are protecting their anonymous sources. But when you raise it to the federal level, we don't have a law there. So there's different legislation on Capitol Hill right now pushing for a federal shield law, and we're kind of caught in the crack right now.
But some accounts of this case say they've now determined that maybe leaking the name in the first place was not a crime, because the person did not know that Valerie Plame was a CIA operative, or there may be no way to prove that what they're investigating is, in fact, that somebody lied about what they said to the grand jury or to federal prosecutors.
Exactly. But there are different shades of gray in terms of, was she known to be a CIA operative? Was she just known in the cocktail circuit of D.C.? Or which, I mean, there's a lot of wiggle room on this case. But the fact that Matthew Cooper and Judith Miller, first of all, Matthew Cooper and Judith Miller had the principle to get this information and realize that it was potentially a drive-by smear on the part of somebody within the administration. And they didn't write about it. They did not go forward with it because they were principled enough to withhold the information. And then they were principled again to not divulge the information, even under the threat of prison time.
We're talking with Matthew Felling of the Center for Media and Public Affairs about the latest twists in the Plame case. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some listeners on the line. Hugh Gamen, I hope I have that correct, is calling us from Sacramento, California.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was wondering about Mr. Novak, whether he has been asked for his notes and whether or not he has provided them, since it was apparently he who started this.
This is the big raised eyebrow inside the Washington, D.C. Beltway right now, Mr. Sacramento. You can reason and deduce the fact that maybe Mr. Novak, because he has not been brought back before the prosecution and because he is not talking about it at any length, he's actually getting a little bit of pressure because he's not talking about it on the record to anybody, that he might have what we would discuss a little arrangement between himself and the prosecution, which might also lead to, I've heard some whispers that the prosecution has gotten some testimony and has received some information from Novak, but they just have to double check. And it's because Miller and Cooper are stonewalling based on their own journalistic principles that they don't have enough to move forward with Novak, but Novak most likely gave away some information that he doesn't want to talk about anymore.
Novak did say on CNN, I think it was yesterday, though, that he will, when all the chips have fallen and all the repercussions, when he's free to talk about this, he will tell all.
Yes, and Novak is correct in saying that what he did is not endangering Mr. Cooper and Mrs. Miller at all.
Thanks for the phone. Let's go now to Matt, and Matt is with us from San Antonio.
Hi. My question was basically, why has it gotten this far? Why has any of this information sort of gotten past the fact that someone decided to publish information about someone in the CIA that would possibly be harmed at all? Why would someone in the journalistic community do this, regardless of your principles on sourcing? Why would it even be an issue as far as, well, someone told me, so I have to publish it? Now, someone told you something that...
Are you asking why Novak wrote this story in the first place?
Yes.
Okay. Why did Robert Novak write this story in the first place?
Oh, well, Robert Novak, I believe, was probably using some of his well-coddled sources within the administration. Actually, the piece says, according to two senior administration officials, Valerie Plame, yada, yada, yada. And I think that he was just, he was advancing a story, first of all, and he was also potentially cashing in a chit with somebody within the administration, and he was relying on the fact that enough people knew that Valerie Plame was a CIA operative, that he was not officially breaking the law by giving it away across the country. But like I said earlier, there's a difference between introducing her to family and friends at a Georgetown cocktail party than putting in the Chicago Tribune and the Creator Syndicate across the country.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Matt. And let's see if we can get another caller in. Steve. Steve from Livermore, California.
Hi. I was curious as to why the references to the Whistleblower Act is being brought here. I think of whistleblowers as someone doing something wrong, where this is just really someone divulging information.
Whistleblowers are usually perceived as somebody blowing the whistle on somebody doing something wrong, but go ahead. What's the analogy here?
Well, yes, I think that whistleblowers rely upon... A whistleblower needs to be able to walk up to a journalist and say, listen, I have some big information for you, but I need you to protect my identity. Yes, what we are dealing with here is not a textbook example of whistleblowership, if that is a word at all, but what we're dealing with is the fact that people have to be able to rely on anonymity on the when they give away information to journalists. And the very fact that Time magazine has decided that they are not going to play that game anymore, at least not when one of their journalists is threatened with jail time, anonymity does not take sides, is my basic point. If somebody is coming at you with all the angels in glory on their shoulder and wanting to do good, or if somebody is coming like a Sopranos hitman and has some information that might be damning to somebody else, anonymity equals anonymity, and you can't pick and choose which anonymous sources are good or bad.
On the other side, the judge says, We issue court orders all the time. We sent a court order to President Nixon saying, you've got to turn over those tapes. He didn't have a choice as to whether he would turn them over or not. Where does the media get off deciding, everybody else on the planet has to obey, everybody else in the country has to obey federal court orders, but not us?
No, and I think Cooper and Miller said that, listen, we understand that this is the rule, and we understand that these are journalists play by different rules, and we're willing to go to jail because that's the cost of being able to be a journalist and cover your sources and put the news out there that people need to see.
And by the way, Steve, thank you very much for the call. The next step in this is, next Tuesday?
Yes, next Tuesday we will see what happens with Judith Miller. The New York Times has already come down extremely strongly against Time magazine, but we might see Judith Miller facing some jail time because the judge gave her and New York Times 7 days, and they are digging in their heels, and I don't see it ending up good for Ms. Miller.
Matthew Felling, thanks for being with us today.
Take care.
Matthew Felling is the media director at the Center for Media and Public Affairs. He was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.